Nina here. I'm a little sick, pardon that. So last summer, I became obsessed with the Neapolitan novels by Elena Ferrante. It's a four-book series that chronicles 60-plus years in the lives of two women from Naples, Elena and Lila.
It's a good read.
Yeah,
I think that's
a good read.
It's a good read.
This is Anne Goldstein. She translated Ferrante's novels into English.
I didn't expect that Ferrante would become so popular. I don't mean that she didn't deserve to become popular, because I think her books are really great. But I just mean it's surprising that a translated book could become so popular.
Popular as in they sold millions of copies, became New York Times bestsellers, are now being adapted into a 32-part television miniseries. HBO is picking up the first bit of that series.
Wait.
Hey, Patrick.
Hi, Nina. A 32-part mini-series?
Yes, a mini-mega-series.
This does not compute. I'm sorry. 32 parts.
Right. It's a mini-mega-series.
So it just means slightly shorter than The Wire or Breaking Bad.
Right. But what hooked me, Patrick, about these books is that Ferrante writes a lot about language and dialect. In fact, throughout the books, you're constantly being made aware of when a character is speaking Neapolitan dialect or Italian. And it got me thinking, what must these books look like in Italian? Is it just a mishmash of Neapolitan and Italian?
Yeah, is it? And what would that sound like?
What would it look like? Well, actually, we'll never know, because it isn't a mishmash of Italian and Neapolitan. It's just Italian.
He said in dialect, or she said in dialect. She says that in Italian, disse in dialetto. And then she goes on in English. I mean, in Italian, in normal Italian. And why she did this, I don't really know. I mean, I think there's lots of reasons. One might be that she thought that other Italians wouldn't understand it, because the dialects are pretty different. For example, there's an Italian-Neapolitan dictionary. So that tells you that there is a difference. So I don't know.
You're listening to The World in Words. This week on the podcast, the struggle between an Italian dialect and the lingua franca. We all know a bit of Neapolitan. I bet you thought this was an Italian song.
Oh, yeah, I recognize that song.
Yeah.
I recognize. You know how I do? This is, I think, a particularly British thing. There was an ad on the TV, a commercial on the TV.
Uh-huh. But how old were you?
I was definitely a kid. I couldn't tell you exactly. But I know the words. Just one cornetto, give it to me. Delicious ice cream from Italy.
Oh my God, the accent and everything.
That good.
Thank you for that, Patrick. Me personally, I can't help but think of the Elvis song, you know, it's now or never, come hold me tight. And I wonder if that's actually a translation or if it's completely different. I have a feeling it's totally different. This that we're hearing right now is actually the great Enrico Caruso singing O Solo Mio. Incidentally, Caruso brought the Neapolitan dialect to the Metropolitan Opera in New York City all the way back in the 1900s. And now, here we are 100 years later, and writer Elena Ferrante is doing it all over again.
But there's a mystery about her, right? What is it? No one knows who she is?
Yeah, Elena Ferrante is a pseudonym, and she wants to keep it that way. Actually, Anne Goldstein, who we heard from earlier, her translator, never met her. She's never even spoken to Ferrante on the phone. All of their correspondence has been in writing or through the publisher. But, and I'm sure a lot of listeners already, you guys already know this, last fall, an Italian journalist, Claudio Gatti, exposed Ferrante's identity in the New York Review of Books. He claims she is, and I'm not going to name her name because I want to respect Ferrante here, a translator who lives in Rome. Here's Gatti defending himself on the BBC.
I did it because I believe that she was very much a public figure. And when millions of books are bought by readers, in a way, I think readers acquire the right to know something about the person who created the work.
I don't buy that one little bit.
No.
I don't think you need to know anything about the person who wrote a book. I haven't read the novels. Although I think I might just do so now.
They are good.
Yeah. Okay, give us the quick, without giving away any spoilers, give us the quick cliff notes.
Okay. No spoilers, I promise. The four books are told from the point of view of the protagonist, Elena, who may or may not be the author, Elena Ferrante. And Elena tells the story of growing up with her best frenemy, and I'm using that word, frenemy, Lila, in the rough and tumble city of Naples. And the novels document their lives over a series of decades, from when they're young girls in the 1950s to middle-aged women in the present. And it has all the themes, you know, those good meaty themes, love, marriage, sex, affairs, violence, and of course the mafia. But most importantly, language. Now, this, Patrick, might seem extremely naive, but reading Ferrante for me was really the first time that I thought deeply about dialects in Italy. I know that Italy is cobbled together collection of cities, states, and I know that many of those states spoke different languages, and I know there's a ton of dialects in Italy, but I never thought critically before about what it means in a practical sense.
Okay, so how is it that Italian became the lingua franca of this place where, what, there were just dialects?
Right, a ton of different dialects. Well, modern Italian is actually a version of the Florentine dialect. It is a dialect.
Oh.
A version of it that's now changed quite a bit. But Florence is in, you know, Tuscany. And during the 14th and 15th century, Tuscany was this powerful region in trade and commerce. And this kind of importance of the region transferred to the language as well. And great writers, who I'm sure you'll know, like Dante, wrote in this Tuscan dialect.
Oh, lucky him.
All right, yeah. I know.
So really, it sounds in this case that commercial power was what propelled one dialect beyond all others.
Well, certainly being like a very important region in trade helped the language kind of gain a foothold. Other writers like Petrarca and Boccaccio wrote in this Tuscan dialect. And informally, this dialect was used as a kind of lingua franca for centuries. But this isn't to say that there wasn't and isn't a rich literary tradition in other dialects around the boot. So Sicilian, Neapolitan, Venetian, lots of different dialects have, you know, huge canons of work. You know, the Neapolitan songs that we just heard, O Solo Mio, that's Neapolitan. So, you know, when Italy was unified only in 1861, there was still a question of what the lingua franca for the entire country should be.
Oh, right. So how did they choose Tuscan?
There's lots of different things that went into choosing this dialect. But one big influence was a writer, the Italian writer Alessandro Manzoni, who is credited with being the father of modern Italian literature and writing Italy's first modern novel, The Betrothed, in this dialect. And he argued that this Florentine dialect should be the official language, and he got his way. But quote-unquote Italian wasn't a given at the time of unification, according to one professor I spoke to. Her name is Olivia Santovetti, and she is a professor of Italian literature at the University of Leeds.
At the time of the unification, so 1861, the first survey revealed that only 2.5%, and I repeat, 2.5% of the population of the Italian peninsula spoke Italian. Astonishing number, okay? 2.5%. So the people in Italy spoke dialects. You know, the language question was the very urgent question. They had to decide how to spread Italian.
So declaring language is one thing. Getting a diverse nation to adopt a lingua franca, an entirely different matter.
2.5% was not enough. You know, a nation needs a language. Now, the identity is obviously related to the language a nation speaks. So there were lots of possible solutions. Obviously, school was the main way to spread Italian in the 19th century. But consider that at the beginning of the 20th century, still in some regional realities, teachers were teaching Italian as a foreign language, like they do with English now, speaking in dialect and maybe putting on the blackboard the Italian words. This at the beginning of the 20th century. Okay, so what I'm saying is that this is not something that you resolve easily and quickly. The linguists all agree that, in fact, the introduction of television in the 1950s, because it's in the 1950s that in Italian household the first television appear.
Bimbo, quella è un'anguria, se non sbaglio. Guarda come si fa.
The introduction of television was what really made the difference in the spreading of Italian as a common national language.
Pedalando alla coppia la bombe, ogni lama si affila senza intoppi, i coltelli portateli da me, e ve li faccio ritornare belli. Arrotino!
Bringing this back to Ferrante's novels, this is exactly the period in which the story of Elena and Lila, her frenemy, remember, begins. In fact, television plays a critical role in one plot point. There's a scene when Lila's family gets the first TV in the neighborhood. And Santoetti sees the novels as
a commentary on the linguistic history of Italy from the 1950s to today's time.
As Ferrante weaves the spread of formal Italian on TV and in school into the background of the novels, she also highlights the tensions between language and dialect. What language a character speaks and how they speak it says everything about who a character is or who a character wants to become. Even the adjectives that Ferrante uses to describe Italian or dialect are pretty telling, like the ones for dialect.
Vulgar, coarse, exaggerated, fierce, violent, nasty, obscene, aggressive, brusque. But then we find also dialect can be also full of feelings, authentic. So the perception of dialect is between these two, the language of violence and the language of candor.
Oh, right, the language of candor. So you're more honest with people who speak dialect,
speaking dialect,
supposedly.
Your home language. Pretty.
So it's not all bad.
No, it's not black and white at all.
So how does Ferrante describe Italian in the novels?
Well, here's what Santoetti found.
Bookish. Italian is often defined as bookish. Can be pompous, cultured, elevated, self-assured, polished, false, unnatural, and pure and good. And this is quite interesting. She often said good Italian, but this good, I think it's ambivalent. There are many nuances for this good Italian. It is complex. It's not dialect bad and Italian good at all.
The protagonist, Elena, for example, makes a big deal about learning proper Italian in school, a language that all of her friends in the neighborhood struggle with. And learning good Italian is her way of getting out of the neighborhood, or so she thinks. But when expressing emotion or feelings, she falls back into her home language, into dialect, a language that at times makes her blush or feel repulsed or even sometimes ashamed.
All the characters in the Neapolitan cycle straddle between Italian and dialect, but not all at the same level. For example, Elena, very young, she understands the power of Italian. There is one very important passage in the volume one where Elena, Lila, and Carmela.
Carmela is another friend from the neighborhood who hasn't continued her schooling, and she really only speaks dialect.
They are really young, maybe 10 or 11 at this point. They are speaking of boyfriends or something, and Lila is speaking dialect, and Elena all of a sudden decides to speak Italian. I will read it. So Lila says, "Why do you say no?" Lila asked me in dialect. I answered, unexpectedly, in proper Italian, to make an impression, to let her understand that even if I spend my time talking about boyfriends, I wasn't to be treated like Carmela. And we began to speak in the language of comics and books, which reduced Carmela to pure and simple listener. So clearly, you see that she has used Italian to strengthen the relationship with Lila and exclude Carmela. In another passage of the novel, she says that language is power. And clearly, she is learning how to master this power.
Language is powerful, sure. But it's not just language. Ferrante shows us how accents are also important. So there's a part in the novel, Patrick, where the main character, Elena, the one who speaks quote-unquote good Italian, she gets accepted to the university in Pisa, which I've been told is kind of like the Harvard in Italy. And she gets there and she instantly feels inadequate. Not that her Italian isn't quote-unquote good or correct, but it's the way she speaks Italian is different. She's too loud, her tone is wrong, her accent marks her. I spoke with literature professor Tiziana De Rogatis, who can relate.
To me, it happened just what has happened to Elena.
De Rogatis teaches in Siena, but she is actually from Naples, just like Elena. And she grew up middle class in Naples, and she did not grow up speaking dialect. In fact, she told me that middle-class families largely don't speak dialect in Naples. She said dialect is mostly spoken in upper-class and lower-class families.
Wait, what?
I know. It's
That's
really,
weird.
Really, really strange. It was strange to me, too. But she conjectures that the disappearance of dialect in the middle class deals a little bit with class distinction. The middle class wants to separate itself from the working class. Italian is a language to get ahead in Italy, and speaking dialect, as much of the working class does, is kind of looked down upon, and there's some sort of class struggle. Also, it's because of the same educational initiatives enacted to teach the country Italian. Middle-class children went to school strictly in Italian, as did their parents, and slowly the dialect disappeared.
Oh, right, right. So in a way, the equivalent, although it's not much of an equivalent in the U.S., is when you have, like, people who speak another language, they come to the U.S. and then their kids don't speak it so much. And,
right,
and then
right,
it dies
right.
out. Yeah.
So many of my friends growing up in California don't speak Spanish because their parents are like, don't speak Spanish. It's going to hold you back.
Right.
Sadly. And then they lose it. In terms of why the upper class and the lower classes continue to speak dialect, it's a little bit fuzzier. According to De Rogatis, Naples has a long literary tradition as well as an aristocracy. It's part of being cultured to speak dialect as well as proper Italian for the upper class, part of your heritage. And, you know, poor education and access to education is another reason why the working class may only speak dialect. So It's an interesting continuum between dialect to Italian to both.
So De Rogatis, she can understand dialect, but she doesn't speak it.
Exactly. Even though she doesn't speak it, just like Elena in the novels, she's still marked by her quote-unquote Neapolitan accent
marked.
In Italian. Marked, exactly. That's how she says it.
My accent always marked me. And this is paradoxical because I speak a very neutral and a very balanced Italian. As I said before, I did not speak Neapolitan.
In fact, Tiziana told me a story about how one of her university colleagues in Siena will even occasionally correct her Italian pronunciation.
Tiziana, this is not the right vowel. Your vowel is closed and is supposed to be open. And the incredible thing is that this colleague was just performing, while he was correcting me, an aspirated C, more or less like your TH. You know, your th.
This is apparently not proper Italian either, but an inflection from a Tuscan dialect.
So he was a northerner correcting a southerner on pronunciation of Italian,
yes.
even though he was
yes.
speaking with the dialect himself.
Yes, but the point is that his dialect is a superior one because it's the Tuscan dialect, which is the mother of the Italian language. So this dialect is perceived as superior.
Oh, so there's still a strong stigma against dialects, especially those southern ones.
Well, it depends on who you talk to.
Eccoci.
Gianni?
How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Today has been like a very...
Gianni Riotta is a columnist for La Stampa and The Atlantic.
Oh, I was born and raised in the south, in Sicily.
And so do you speak dialect?
I did not, because in our home it was forbidden by my dad to speak a dialect. But I grew up around people speaking both Italian and Sicilian, And I was exposed to the dialect in Sicily since I was a kid. And also my mom's family comes from Milan in the north. And so when we would visit her family in the north, I was exposed to another dialect, Milanese.
So your dad forbid you guys from speaking dialect in the house? What was his reasoning? Like, did he speak dialect himself?
Yes. The reasoning was that dialect would hamper your performance in school, both in terms of writing Italian and answering or speaking Italian to professors. Also, my dad, as a young man, had been a speaker and then a reporter for the radio established by the Allies in Sicily in 1943. And so his Italian pronunciation was flawless because he had to go like, you know, the kind of perfect pronunciation that radio speakers had at the time. And so he would already be annoyed by the Italian with a Sicilian inflections, while on the other end, he was a fluent speaker of Sicilian.
Wow, so he actually spoke Sicilian probably in his house growing up, but he was annoyed by the accent, the Sicilian accent in Italian.
My memory is to go get an ice cream with my aunt. It was actually a great aunt. It was my father's aunt, and she would ask me in Italian, what flavor do you want your ice cream? And I would say cream or lemon or chocolate in Italian. And then she would talk in Sicilian to the ice cream vendor saying, oh, my nephew wants this and that. And it was fun because he would immediately, constantly live in a dual language culture.
Even though you couldn't speak both languages.
But I could understand it. When my sister, that is slightly older than me, finished college and she went to teach in Palermo in the inner city, elementary school, first and second grade, she came horrified to my dad and said, Dad, but they don't speak Italian, they just speak Sicilian. How can I teach them Italian if they don't speak Italian? So what she did is that my dad gave her a crash course in Sicilian. She learned Sicilian, but now she speaks very well, and then she would teach Italian as a foreign language, meaning teaching Italian through Sicilian. And even now, when you walk in Palermo, toughest neighborhood with her, you see her approached by some very mean-looking men, and they ask her, Maestra, teacher, how are you? It was so great to see you.
So today, if you're going to like teach in the inner cities in Palermo, would it be the same situation, or has dialect changed?
I think that pretty much is the same situation because my mom still lives in Palermo, and a lot of people, especially working class people, they still speak Sicilian.
I'm just curious about the attitudes towards dialect all over, not just Sicilian, but all over in Italy today. How prominent is dialect still in the daily life of most Italians? And as a reporter, when you're reporting out in the countryside or you're reporting out in places, do you ever run into dialect?
Constantly. I love and visit, and I had the fortune of teaching at the university in Venice. And what mesmerizes me is that when you listen to Venetians talking to each other, they always talk Venetian. In Milan, there is now it's fading a bit, the dialect is fading a bit, but in the countryside you can still hear Milanese. The Roman dialect is more an inflection than a dialect, but is widely spoken in Rome, and even the younger generations make a point of speaking in Roman dialect. In Naples, the tradition is very musical, as you know, the traditional Neapolitan songs are all in dialect, but even younger artists like Nuova Compagnia di Canto Popolare or Pino Daniele, they all sang in Neapolitan, and that's quite beautiful. So dialects are still very much alive in Italy.
Napoli mille colore. Napoli mille paure. Napoli a voce re creatura, che sai che hanno chiara. tu sai che non si sola.
But how many people are strictly monolingual? So I wonder how it plays out, like, for example, in government. Like, can you go to court and use dialect? Can you get newspapers in dialect? Like, are schools taught in dialect? How does that play out in everyday life?
No, 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 no. You cannot. You cannot use it in court. On the other end, the mafia very often used dialects trying to baffle the police in New York in the early 80s and late 70s when the Sicilian mafiosi came to New York, and they were talking to each other in Sicilian over the phone trying to fool the police. And so what the police had to do, they had imported a Sicilian policeman from Palermo, and they listened to the Sicilian mafiosi and they translated them in English. It was a Sicilian English translation for the New York Police Department.
That's an amazing story. That's crazy.
It's a true story.
So what happens, though, like if there's a dialect speaker somewhere in Italy and they have to go to court and they don't speak Italian? Are there interpreters? Does this still happen?
I think that the percentage of the population that does not speak any Italian now is really puny. I would say that it's almost insignificant. Even older people speak both Italian and the local dialect. It's really insignificant minority of Italian that are not able to express themselves in Italian.
Going back to your father and the reason why he didn't want you to speak dialect, he really didn't like the inflections of Sicilian in Italian. Do you feel like dialect speakers encounter any stereotypes or prejudice for speaking dialect versus Italian?
You know, I changed my mind about it. About 10 years ago, I taught a class at Princeton and University here in the United States, and I honestly still was very wary of Italian speaking dialects because, honestly, it was like having a heavy Cockney accent in England. In a class-oriented society, this can be a hurdle for you if you want to progress in your job, in your life. Now my position has sort of mellowed down because I understand that dialects are an enrichment for a country, especially when it comes in terms of theater, movies, music, and even writing.
One last thing, Patrick. Getting back to Ferrante for a final moment.
Okay.
Gianni Riotta would not confirm or deny that Ferrante was this translator who Gatti outed. Remember from the beginning of the podcast, but
when I was a young man, I worked alongside the real writer that is Elena Ferrante.
Sounds like he's kind of claiming to know who she is.
Yeah, but what he really, really wanted to tell me is that he's heard her voice and he knows her accent.
And her accent actually is quite good, but it was her husband that had a very, and still has a very, very, very thick, and to me, even, you know, a way too thick Neapolitan accent. And I think she's dealing with that. I think she's actually bonding with that kind of memory in her mind.
The whole obsession in Ferrante's novels maybe comes from the experiences of her husband. I don't know. Lots of conjecture here. Maybe we'll never know who Elena Ferrante is, and all better for it. That's all for this week. Music was from Enrico Caruso and Pino Daniele. Thanks to Tina Toby for mixing the podcast and to William Troop for being a constant Italian consultant. Thanks also to Catherine Whalen, Kathy Merritt, and Andrew Sussman. And of course, everyone here in the world's newsroom in Boston.
Tweet us if you like at LingoPod. I'm at Patry Cox.
I'm at Porzuki. P-O-R-Z, like zebra, U-C-K-I. And if you like what you hear, do please give us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. It really, really helps. And most importantly, thanks so much for listening.
Just one cornetto, give it to me. Delicious ice cream of Italy. Di notte and gioca dream. Give me cornetto.
So, Nina, about that 32-part mini-series.
Mini-mega-series?
I do wonder, what are they going to do with the dialect, with the Neapolitan dialect? They can't do the same as the books do.
That is a really good question. I know that they're going to be produced in Italian, but I don't know if it also is in Italian and Neapolitan dialect. I mean, I hope that we get to hear a little bit of Neapolitan. I wonder if they'll use subtitles in Italian.
Oh, yeah. How far would the subtitles go for people who understand Italian?
So many questions.
Tune in.
I'm really excited about this mini-mega mini-series, FYI.